Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
My name is Angelo Carasone, better known as Stop Back on Twitter, and primarily I spend my time trying to debunk right-wing lies that permeate our media, and there's, you know, one of the places that we do it is on Bob Carson's show.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013. And you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour. And I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is David Levitt, your host from SYM Radio. SYM Radio is helping raise awareness to missing persons, parental stranger abductions, and human trafficking through our partners. We also raise awareness that people with disabilities can do whatever they set their mind to through the love of God and Christ. And we're proud to be an affiliate with Carson's Corner. And you're listening to Carson's Corner with Jay Ray and Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio and also at SYMradio.com/live.
Hi there. This is Justin Ray Harvey of J. Ray Radio and the co-host of Carson's Corner with Bob Carson. We have an announcement. We are no longer affiliated with Underground Progressive Radio 5:30 a.m. Even though we've had a critical change in the programming, our programming will remain the same. Times are subject to change, so just sit back and enjoy the program as you normally would. The only change is we've grown bigger and better, and like I said, we no longer support or advertise Underground Progressive Radio 5:30 a.m. in any way. Thank you and show some respect.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
Welcome to all of you this Tuesday, August 20th, 2013. My name is Bob Carson, and this is Carson's Corner. We're broadcasting you live here on Blog Talk Radio in conjunction with the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. We're also broadcasting to you live using a new computer. I finally got my new laptop. Yes, it has Windows 8. But you know what? We should have no more problems with the show right now. I got a new version of Skype downloaded here. This radio show, the purpose of me getting this new laptop was to just broadcast this radio show in peace and harmony every single week. And that's what we're doing here. And so I'm just proud that we have a new way to deliver you the show. Let's welcome to the program our co-host, as always, Mr. Justin Ray Harvey, J. Ray. How are you, J. Ray?
I'm doing wonderful, Bob, and I got to say, we're going to have a big, big show. We've got lots to cover, and I wanted to mention real quick, too, Bob, I'm glad that you suggested that I watched Megan is Missing on Netflix. That'll make you think twice before you meet up with somebody on the Internet, brother, I'm telling you. That was some freaky stuff.
You know, I got to tell you, I've become addicted to watching disturbing films on Netflix now. I watched another one, and I know that you saw this post on Facebook. It's called 96 Minutes. Go watch it. Anybody that subscribes to Netflix, it's $7.99, I believe, each month. It is worth every penny, I'm telling you. 96 Minutes, it tells the story about two college girls that were carjacked by a couple of thugs, one wannabe young thug and another thug that is trying to go to college and is halfway in and out of the thug world. And, you know, both these guys, of course, came from bad homes. And it was just a very, very disturbing film, very suspenseful film and whatnot. And it was a very, very good film, I'm telling you, 96 minutes. If you want to see a very, very good film. But Justin is right. Megan is Missing is probably one of the disturbing films on Netflix. Although, you know, you don't see a lot of blood and gore, which is good, I think. But Megan is Missing was endorsed by Polly Klass's father, Mark Klass. You'll remember Polly Klass was abducted, raped, and kidnapped by Richard Allen Davis, who was a convicted felon, a multiple felon, in California, and she was abducted, I believe, from her friend's bedroom, and she was killed. And Richard Allen Davis is one of the most disgusting people alive. The guy is just a demon. And, you know, to make matters even worse, there's a website out there that features killer signatures. And Richard Allen Davis is on this website, and he wrote this sick letter to this sick guy who has this website glorifying serial killers. And at the end of the letter, Richard Allen Davis says, "Crudely yours, Richard Allen Davis." Just sick person. And Mark Klass is a great guy. He's a children's advocate and you know, has the Klass Foundation. And he worked with this guy. I forget the guy's name. But they came up with this movie, Megan is Missing. And it's based off of seven different cases of child predators online, and it's really a very horrific film that puts things in perspective for everybody out there. And I also encourage everybody out there to watch that film.
Absolutely, Bob. And speaking of killers, as I was telling you today, I was shocked to find out that Jodi Arias has her own Twitter account, yet she's locked up for murder, and she has her own Twitter account. Now, what does that say about our society?
You know, this is where you and I are in agreement with a lot of right-wing people out there that can't stand our culture, and, you know, I can't defend anything like this. I mean, it's absolutely disgusting. I've seen the crime photos. I've seen what Jodi Arias did, I believe, to her boyfriend, and she tried to claim self-defense, but the injuries were so severe that a self-defense defense was just basically thrown out. I mean, you know, it's absolute common sense, but, you know, this is the same society that one of the Boston bombers, although he hasn't been convicted, what's his name, Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, the Boston bomber, the younger Boston bomber, was glorified by the Rolling Stone. They put him on one of their magazines. They made him look like Jim Morrison, for crying out loud. And there was a backlash, and you had a lot of retailers, to their credit, refuse to carry that edition of the Rolling Stone. But this is what our society's become, where we glorify killers. We make movies about them. We give them a tremendous amount of media attention. And, you know, I remember I was watching not too long ago Marilyn Manson. Marilyn Manson was on Bill O'Reilly's show. I mean, this might have been going back 10 years. I mean, it was a long time. And Marilyn Manson's actually a pretty smart guy. His real name is Brian Warner. You know, he's a dark, obviously. He's an artist and whatnot. And he was telling Bill O'Reilly that, you know, he didn't talk about the Columbine shootings after Dylan and Eric Klebold killed, you know, 13 students, I believe, and teachers, and ultimately killed themselves, because he didn't talk about them, because that's what they wanted. They wanted him, they wanted media attention. They ultimately got that. And I think they did, they probably did make the cover of magazines. And it's unfortunate, because we are a consumer-driven media where we see this, where the media just unfortunately glorifies these serial killers, because there's a certain amount of interest that the public shows in these serial killers. And I would argue that the reason why there's interest in serial killers on the part of the public is because the corporate media puts it out there. I think that has a lot to do with it. If, you know, we actually had, if there was the enforcement of antitrust laws, if there was a actual news division in America instead of news divisions coming under the jurisdiction of entertainment divisions, if we actually fed the public information instead of infotainment, then maybe we wouldn't see some of this garbage. It all goes back to capitalism in its current form, and that really, I think, is one of the reasons why our society has deteriorated to the point that someone like Jody Arias can have a Twitter account.
Yeah, exactly. And Bob, what gets me is, like, they've already made a movie about this situation and everything. And also, what I found interesting in the case is two things. She always changed her story, and then she had mentioned, she said if she was convicted, that she would want the death penalty. But now that she's been found guilty, she doesn't want the death penalty.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't followed the case. I don't know if I know that there was some hearing regarding the death penalty, and I don't know what the status is. But, you know, ultimately they're going to have to decide that. She's been found guilty. The evidence, as I understand, was pretty overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have to decide that. I believe in the death penalty. I think the death penalty is warranted. It's not perfect. I mean, you know, I believe it's been proven that we have actually put to death innocent people. But nothing is perfect. But, you know, you figure the death penalty, when you go through all the appeals and you go through the process and whatnot, you know, it's necessary. I believe so. And even though, you know, every, you know, industrialized democracy, I think, outlaws the death penalty as cruel and unusual. But I personally believe, I think in certain cases, it's warranted. There are certain cases that are so extreme that it's warranted. So, you know, we'll have to find out. But yeah, it's absolutely disgusting. We're a culture in decline, as Peter Joseph from the Zeitgeist Films brilliantly tells us. And the only way that we can really deal with this is to reject it, is to, you know, again, you know, we always come back to this point where we have a corporate media that's intent on dumbing us down. They, you know, want to focus on reality shows and sports, and as Noam Chomsky writes, or as Noam Chomsky has talked about in the past, how sports are a way to manufacture consent to the general public. I mean, everybody knows sports. Everybody knows, you know, sports teams, their local sports teams, and it is presented to the American public to basically get them to consent to power. And it's really unfortunate. But the way I deal with it is just don't watch it. I don't care. I mean, I guess to some extent, maybe I'll click on some links or whatever. So maybe I am part of the problem, but, you know, I'm just not going to buy it. I'm not going to, you know, watch the TV show. I'm not going to buy that Rolling Stone magazine. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that, because that's just feeding the machine.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these days it's
It's all about the mighty dollar, Bob. That's all it is.
That's absolutely right. Could not say that any better. All right, 347-326-9749, 347-326-9749. If Congress is out of session, which I think is good. Our Congress has so many vacation spots throughout the year, and it's just absolutely disgusting. And this Congress is on path to become the least productive, even less productive than the previous Congress. And you still got major pieces of legislation. You still got the debt ceiling. Suddenly, the debt ceiling is a political issue now, which never has been the case throughout the history of our country. You've got the immigration bill, which doesn't look like it's going to go anywhere. Okay, so there's going to be no path to citizenship for illegal immigrants who have come to this country. You've got the health care law, the Affordable Care Act, which is set to be implemented pretty soon, and that's causing a lot of controversy. I think we could do an entire show about the Affordable Care Act and whatnot. But I'm looking on Think Progress, and this is a very interesting story because I think it really sets a tone to where we are headed as a country. South Carolina approves plan to exile its homeless. Okay, and you can make an argument that other cities in the country have done this already. New York is I think an example. I mean, you years ago had problems with homeless people out there, and they passed laws and basically rerouted the homeless to different areas of New York. And looks like in South Carolina, they're doing the same thing where homeless residents are being forced to either leave the town or be arrested. Now, one of the things that I think we have to look at when we say, why are there homeless people out there? I mean, it's a very complicated discussion. But another thing we have to look at, I think, is the closing of mental institutions over the last 30-plus years. There's no question that homeless people, that there's a significant amount of homeless people that are mentally ill, okay, are addicted to drugs. And because we've gone from a treatment society to a punitive society where, we lock them up and throw away the key, we've cut back on programs. We've certainly cut back on shelters. There's just not a lot of funding for anything. This is what happens. Our current form of capitalism breeds homelessness. And now in America, you have a point where you have, for every person that's homeless, you have 22 houses or 17 houses available. There's plenty of houses out there. There's plenty of homes. Just like Jacques Fresco of the Venus Project pointed out, that during World War II, with all the amount of resources and money we spent, in World War II, we could have eradicated homelessness all throughout the planet. There's plenty of resources. There's plenty of money out there, and yet we don't do it. We just do not care. We lock these people up because I think there's a part of our society that wants to enslave workers. We want to enslave individuals that don't have homes because there's a profit to be made somewhere along the line. And that's what we're coming to right now, this antipathy for the poor, for the homeless, the mean-spiritedness. You look at the Republican Party, you look at the Tea Party, okay? It's just a group of people that have been, I would argue, conditioned to hate poor people, to blame them for our society's problems. And the Reagan Revolution started 30 years ago which says, you know, greed is good, and we need to worship the CEOs, and we need to try to get rich instead of having a middle-class life. I think that has led us to a point now where we have cities that are just trying to, rather than try to, you know, solve the problem of homelessness, rather than try to treat people, is trying to evacuate them or have them arrested.
Well, I think part of the problem with people being homeless is everything is so damn expensive, it's pathetic, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You either pay for it or you're out on the street.
Well, you know, one of the things about capitalism is that you need to eat to survive. You need money to survive, okay? There's no question about that. And your ability to make money is not 100% under your control. There are certain factors in life that you have control over, okay? But your ability to make money in our society is influenced by a lot of things, and you need a job, okay? And you need money, and money is controlled by banks, right? Money is printed out of thin air through our fractional reserve banking system, and it is pumped out to other banks who in turn, you know, pump out money to our government. So you have to look at who controls the money supply. And secondly, you know, jobs, employment, right? You need a job to survive because America does not have a social safety net, all right? And your employer and the banks that are lending your money to or lending money to your employer, they have a tremendous influence over how our economy is run. They have a tremendous amount of influence over the labor market out there. So, you know, indirectly, these forces, these political forces control your ability to live because you need money to survive. You don't make money, you don't survive in America. A necessitous man, as Franklin Delano Roosevelt says, is not a free man. And so, you know, if there is a high number of people out there that do not have a job, which is the case here in the United States, and I suspect is the case in South Carolina, corporate profits are at an all-time high. The stock market is at an all-time high. These forces, the ownership class and the investor class or whatever you want to call them, have the ability to keep you out of work, to keep you necessitous, and that's what's happening right now. Is where, you know, your ability to find a job is impacted tremendously by our trade policies. It's impacted tremendously by the policies of the Federal Reserve. And so, you know, all of us here, I'm pretty much one paycheck away from being homeless. I mean, that's the God's honest truth. Brad Hullhut of Pinko the Bear Radio, who's also on the CommonsProjectNetwork.com, he's practically homeless. I know a guy at work, has a master's degree like myself. He's practically homeless. And look at who's benefiting in our society. Who's making money? Who's benefiting from the way it is? And that's how you know who's essentially causing this to take place. If one person is homeless, then another person, you know, acquires more property. There's a cause and effect. Everything is related in our economy. And that's what we have right now, is we just have massive homelessness because the way our economy is run and because our current system, the current form of capitalism, is not working for anybody.
Yeah, exactly, Bob. And what gets me sick about it is, say someone like me that has a disability wants to get a job and everything. What sickens me is once I get a job, all my benefits are taken away.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's one of these things. If you look at how they calculate poverty, if they don't, there's not a consideration of the cost of living out there when we calculate poverty. I mean, if you ask me, you know, someone that, like myself, I'm practically in poverty. Even though my wages do not reflect what the poverty standard is for a single person. But in actuality, I'm pretty much in poverty right now, even though, yeah, I have a laptop, yeah, I have a car. Still, the cost of living in my state induces poverty. And, you know, it's the same thing with you, is that this idea that if you get a job, then suddenly you won't need government assistance. You won't need, money from the government to help pay your medical bills. It's just unbelievable. It really is. And so what do you do in your situation? Is that you have to, you can't lose, you know, the what are you on, Medicaid?
Medicaid and Medicare. So,
yeah.
You know, I have those insurances. But another thing, too, is, like, I think privatizing these companies and health care and Medicare and all this stuff, I think that that's a bad move.
Yes, and what we're seeing right now is, in with the Affordable Care Act, one of the good things about the Affordable Care Act is the expansion of Medicaid. And in my state, New Jersey, Governor Christie actually signed an expansion of Medicaid. I don't know what the case is in West Virginia, but we need more money for these programs. And the reason why is because we as a society, there should be a minimum threshold, a minimum place where individuals are and cannot go below. Because, you know, if we don't provide you with medical care, and you know, look, I don't consider Medicare or Medicaid patients leeches, as they would be described by, you know, someone like Paul Ryan or one of these right-wing Tea Party people. I don't consider someone that receives Medicare, that has paid taxes, paid into the system their entire lives, I don't consider them leeches. And even someone like yourself, Justin, who, you know, pay state taxes, you pay local taxes, you're a contributing member to our society. It's just that there are some people in our society that have medical issues and through no fault of their own and need a certain level of care. And when we provide that level of care to that person, we all benefit as a society, because ultimately, you know, if you didn't get the care, if you didn't get the funding from the state, you're still going to have to get the medical care that you have. And, you know, we want people to have a decent life in America. And that's why, you know, we have these services. But the idea of privatizing these services, you know, the private market is, you know, Peter Joseph argues this in the Zeitgeist films, is based on inefficiency. It's based on trying to reduce services, reduce costs, put cost-cutting measures in the production of products, and maximize profits. And that's the bottom line. And that's why the private industry as a whole cannot do what the government does when it comes to things like Social Security, when it comes to things like Medicaid, Medicare, Veterans, VA care, the post service, the police departments, the fire departments. Privatization, and I'm not against privatization, but privatization is based on inefficiency, because somebody has to make a profit. Somebody has to make money, okay? And the way that they make money is to cut services, is to, cut corners and to do little and make as much money as they possibly can. And we're seeing this in, you know, the prison industry, okay? Many states across America are getting rid of the for-profit prison systems because they're inherently inefficient and they're costing the taxpayers a lot of money. Glenn Langor, who was on this program not too long ago, actually spoke about this, how, you know, private prison companies are, you know, guards are working overtime purposely. They have riot pay, so they're purposely labeling, you know, activities as riots so they can make more money. We're seeing this with the Postal Service, with, you know, FedEx and UPS. There's a reason why people want to mail their mail using the post office, because the post office is inherently more efficient. So privatization has become a tool. It is leading us towards fascism. And, you know, FDR talked about when private interests control our government. That's what fascism is. And that's what we're seeing right now, where, you know, the Wall Street, the defense industry, the agriculture industry, the pharmaceutical industry, these private interests are essentially controlling our government, and they're accountable to nobody. And you know, so the privatization of our resources, of our schools, of everything, is everywhere as we move more towards fascism. Again, fascism is, you know, private control over our economy. And I submit to you, that's what's happening. So, you know, when you hear somebody say privatization, understand that they're talking about corporatization. They're talking about corporate control over our government. And it's wrong. We need to go in the opposite direction. We need to not privatize, you know, vital industries that, you know, should be responsible for the public good.
I couldn't agree more, Bob. I mean, like I said, you know, it's all about the mighty dollar, you know, and, you know, we just need to come together and say enough is enough. We need to fix this. We need to fix this now.
Well, you know, and you look at our president, President Obama, who's no liberal whatsoever, okay? President Obama is a very conservative president when it comes to the economy, when it comes to national defense, when it comes to, you know, just about everything, our trade agreements, the health care law that he passed. It was by no means a progressive piece of legislation. It relied on private for-profit companies. You know, President Obama, don't forget, met with many CEOs, healthcare CEOs, to talk about ways to give them more customers. And, you know, President Obama got rid of government-run healthcare and the public option, which the American people supported. But President Obama believes in privatization. And, you know, if you look at our nation's schools, half of our school systems, I believe, this is according to the Black Agenda Report, have been privatized under President Obama. I was listening to Ed Schultz today, and this is absolutely disgusting, but this is the truth, that one of President Obama's campaign staffers, I believe his name is Jeff Messina. I'm going to look this up right now. But the guy that ran one of the Obama presidential campaigns, with the last name of Messina, I'm looking up right now. This guy, you know what he's doing right now? He's going over to the UK and trying to get the Whig Party popular when advancing their austerity agenda. So here we have a guy who was part of the Obama administration going over to England or the UK and trying to push austerity measures. And this is the guy that, you know, supposedly ran President Obama's campaign. I'm looking him up right now. I don't know if it's Jeff Messina, but it's I'm trying to get his name. But this is the guy that supposedly, ran President Obama's campaign. This is what's happening right now, where, you know, Jim Messina. That's it. Yeah, Jim Messina. This is what's happening right now, where people in the Obama administration and the Democratic Party as a whole has really become identical to a moderate Republican Party, maybe of the 40s, 50s, and 60s, where now we have basically two parties that believe in privatization. We have two parties that believe in a private healthcare system. We have two parties that believe in huge defense spending, in low taxes for the rich, and low corporate taxes. And, you know, what happens is, now, you know, we don't have a choice at the ballot box anymore, because both parties have become virtually indistinguishable from each other, and they're racing to privatize just about everything. You know, we talked about this on the show before, where we have privatized fire hydrants. We have privatized roadways. We have privatized bridges. We have privatized parks. The entire city of Detroit now has been privatized. They're under the jurisdiction of this corporate lawyer, this fascist, and Rick Snyder, who puts a corporate lawyer in there that's just beholden to the banking industry. You know, we've privatized our water systems, okay? Martin Luther King, Dr. King said, you know, we live on a planet where three-fourths of the planet is water, and yet people still receive a water bill. It doesn't make any sense. You know, we've privatized our radio, and we've privatized everything. And when you privatize these services, they're no longer available to the public. And that's what's wrong, is that, you know, land ownership, the ownership of the airwaves, you know, other areas, they're owned. They should be owned by you and I, except they're owned now by a private company that's not accountable to us. And we have to address this, because I'm telling you, folks, we're going down this road towards fascism, where, you know, if corporations could privatize your organs, if they could privatize the air that we breathe, they would.
Well, that's one reason I'm not an organ donor, Bob, because my luck, something would happen like that if I became an organ donor, so I'm not an organ donor.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't either, because it's become a huge market and whatnot. But, you know, I mean, it's your point about privatization, Justin, is well taken, because where privatization equals corporatization, we don't need more, you know, control by private interests. God knows, you know, between lobbying, between regulatory capture, between the court systems, the private interests have too much control over our lives. We need more government expansion. And, you know, I realize that this is not a popular idea among low-information voters. You know, oh, government, you know, you got this clown, this slob, Chris Christie, just about every Republican campaigning on the idea of less government. And people buy into this garbage because that's what they hear on the corporate-driven airwaves, you know, government this, government that. But by the same token, when these people are, you know, complaining about less government, they depend on government services, as we all do. We all depend on the United States government in one form or another. Business is a creation of the government, and business is allowed to make profits without anybody threatening their profit model, because of the government. We depend on government regulation. We, you know, depend on the police departments. We depend on the fire departments. We depend on the military and everything. And people like the government. People, you know, consent to government all the time. And, you know, but by the same token, they have this almost irrational skepticism of the government, just for no other reason than, you know, somebody's telling them that. And it's unfortunate that, you know, politicians can get away with this, and they can make, you know, voters believe that somehow the government is the problem, even though, you know, we look to the government for just about everything. You know, when there's a natural disaster, who do you look for? Do you look for Bank of America? Do you look for Wells Fargo? No, you look for your local police department or FEMA or whatever. You know, and I could just go down the line. And we have to sort of, you know, fight back. Yeah, what's up?
A lot of these politicians want to take everybody's guns away, and I don't agree with that either.
Well, you know, one of the things that we have to get out of this notion. We have to really reform the way we think here, and we have to just get certain concepts in our head. The one thing that we should really understand is that corporations, corporate profits should not be the end-all be-all when it comes to our economy. Okay, corporate profits should not come at the expense of the American people. That's one of the first things we should really understand. The second thing we should understand is that we have a system right now that controls labor and allows capital to just do whatever it wants. We have a system of labor control, as Joe Burns points out in his book Reviving the Strike, where our laws are written and enforced to control labor and treat labor as a commodity while rewarding capital. We have to agree that there should be more government services, and there shouldn't be a privatized healthcare system in America. You know, you look at our healthcare spending, the United States of America is spending almost 18% of its GDP on healthcare, okay? And we're the only industrialized country that has for-profit healthcare companies at the very foundation of the healthcare system in America. And as we talked earlier, Justin, our private market system is based on inefficiency, okay? And you look at the amount of people that are sick and dying in America, it's more so than any other industrialized country. We have the highest rate of infant mortality. We have the highest rate of diseases, highest rate of this, highest rate of that. And yet these companies are profiting through the roof, and there's something inherently wrong about that. And that's because we privatized our healthcare system. We've accepted the notion that a profit margin is more important than someone's health, and that's absolutely disgusting. So as long as we take these steps, we change the way we think, and I think it's going to be caused by a revolution. Then we'll reject the notion of privatization. We'll reject the notion of a private, for-profit a company. And we'll start to see things differently in ways that benefit all of us instead of, the private interests. I don't want to hear about big business anymore. I don't want to hear about, what we need to do to appease big business. I want to hear about the well-being of our country. I want to hear about you, J. Ray. And that's why Ralph Nader talks about yardsticks. We need to use different yardsticks by which we measure our society. The yardsticks shouldn't be, business and what's the stock market doing and what's the rate of inflation and this and that. It should be, homelessness, well-being, these different measures. And if we do that, then we start to, reject business as being the end-all be-all. It used to be in America that you'd have a labor division of a news department, or a newspaper or a television station. You'd have union newspapers, union radio stations, union television stations. It's all gone, and it's all big business. Everything is. So, this is what we have to do. This is what we have to understand to really reclaim our democracy.
Exactly, Bob. We need to take a stand and say enough is enough. And I think what a lot of Americans do is they listen to these politicians and they're spoon-fed to what they should believe in.
Yep. And, these politicians, who's speaking for them? I mean, who are they speaking for? When President Obama delivers his speech and he's reading from teleprompters, right, who put those words in a teleprompter? His campaign, manager or his campaign people, who are they listening to? Well, they're listening to, pollsters who are telling him, oh, this is what you got to say on this issue. This is what you got to say on that issue. So President Obama is not directly, speaking to the American public, and his campaign is listening to. They may, talk a good game. They may say that they're for this, they're for that, but ultimately, when it comes to legislating, they have the interests of big business as first and foremost, and that's just an absolute reality, and that's with any person in the White House. You know, they're when it comes down to it, they're listening to the banks. They're listening to the health insurance companies. They're listening to the defense industries. And you and I are probably the last people in line. And that is really reflected in the fact that you look at what President Obama is doing right now with the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is the head of the Federal Reserve is very, very important. Some people say that the head of the Federal Reserve is more important than the President of the United States because, again, the Federal Reserve is our central bank, and it controls the money supply. And the person in charge of the Federal Reserve is going to be in charge of our interest rates and, you know, pumping money into the economy. And what is President Obama set to do? He's set to, according to all reports, nominate a guy in Larry Summers, hedge fund manager, a man who deregulated Wall Street that almost, you know, if you had to blame someone, a single person for the collapse of Wall Street, it probably would be Larry Summers or Alan Greenspan or Robert Rubin, but you know, just a handful of guys. This is the guy that brought down Wall Street. This is the guy who works with hedge fund managers to deregulate our economy, and he's going to be the Federal Reserve, Justin, chairman. This guy who literally, again, caused the collapse of Wall Street, which led to millions of people losing their jobs, their retirements, and sends the world economy into a tailspin. And now he's going to be the head of the Federal Reserve. It's absolutely freaking demoralizing when you look at that. You know, it just takes the breath right out of you because it shows you who has the power in our society. You know, if you rob a bank or if I rob a bank, we're going to be put in jail. But if Larry Summers, if Wall Street robs the government, right, and robs people's retirements, not only are they not put in jail, but they're put in charge of investigating future bank robberies. They're put right in the helm of power again. And it's just unbelievable.
Exactly, Bob. But think of it this way. We get arrested and get put in jail. Somebody will make a movie about us then.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it depends on what we do. And, you know, I mean, street crime is, you know, Ralph Nader talks about this, how street crime is nothing compared to white-collar crime and everything. And, the wealthy interests, the powerful interests, you know, the Wall Street interests, the people behind dubious wars, the wealthy donors that are bankrolling corporations like Walmart and others, they have the economic power to write the laws to justify their behavior. You know, people ask, why is our tax code so complicated? Why is the tax code the way it is? Well, the United States tax code is over 70,000 pages. Okay, and the reason why it's that many pages is because corporations write our tax laws to benefit themselves and nobody else. And we end up suffering because of it. We don't have the tax revenue to adequately fund the government. Our roads go unpaved. Our bridges go unrepaired. Our services go unfunded. And right now we're at a race to the bottom. Now we've got cities declaring bankruptcy. We've got cities trying to kick out homeless people. We've got just an all-out war against workers. We're moving towards a total fascist corporate state. And it's all because, you know, who we hand the power to in America. I mean, we need a system where we contain capital. We need to develop this mindset that capital has run amok and is trampling on all of our liberties. And we need a we society as opposed to a me society. And in order for that to happen, we're going to have to change the fundamentals of our economy so that people like Justin and I are the very focal point of our politicians' activities. And the only way that's going to change is if we vote them out of office, we get them out, we change the system to the point where there's a lot of changes that need to be made. But, you know, this is what we have to do.
Absolutely, and this is why we do it each and every week. So.
That's right, and I want to encourage everybody to visit the commonsprojectnetwork.com to hear other shows like this as well. You're not going to hear a lot of media like this because everything is corporate-owned, and Justin and I have really hammered on this, you know, over the past month. How corporations have filtering systems, and any corporation you go to, you work for any company, they have a filtering system, whether you realize it or not. And those that have independent thought, those that do not fit a certain mold, those that, you know, are not willing to submit themselves to a company that may just not have everybody's interests at heart, they are filtered out, and they are not allowed to advance really in a particular company. And you know, you have a corporate media system here where companies have merged, and if you see it on television, you hear it on radio, you read it in print, it's controlled by one of six corporations. And you know, independent analysis, thoughts like what we're talking about today, ideas, you know, questioning capitalism, it's not going to land you in a high-paying job in our country because, you know, again, as we talked about earlier in the show, everything is dependent upon money, okay? Business interests are narrowly focused on making profit, and, you know, a radio host that questions the very model of business in America, the very profit system in America, is going to upset advertisers. It's going to upset, you know, the corporate interests, and therefore, you know, you're not going to see it. This is why we have no diverging views in America in the media landscape. We just don't. I mean, you know, both political parties and their media outlets support the system, okay? And so, you know, it's difficult. It really is. But, you know, I'm hopeful that people are tuning into the show and others. I'm hopeful that people are becoming more distrustful of the corporate-driven, corporate-sponsored, corporate-owned media. I'm hopeful that, you know, people are looking for alternatives, and I know that they are because, you know, people just had enough. I always say on the show, don't trust a millionaire pundit on, you know, news or television or, you know, some columnist because they don't represent you. They're not in the thick of things. You know, they should not have any credibility with you because, as Noam Chomsky says, people that are part of the media, you know, they'll tell you, nobody controls my thoughts. Nobody controls what I say. Well, the corporation that you work for already knows what you are going to say, or else you wouldn't work there in the first place. And, you know, that's what's so important about what J. Ray and I are doing each week here on Carson's Corner, is we're giving you unfiltered news and analysis and opinions that you're not going to hear anywhere else because of the very corporate-driven, corporate-owned, and corporate-sponsored media.
Oh, absolutely, Bob. I mean, it's what we do. I mean, and also, you know, people's got to be grateful to this show, too, because you pay each and every month just so that you can spread the word about what you do.
Yeah, and that's very important, too, is that, you know, nobody is helping us out financially. And it's really struggle. Like, I mean, you know, towards the end of the month, and this is the God's honest truth, when I, and it's worth it for me. I mean, it's worth every penny, but just to put things in perspective for people out there, when I pay my Blog Talk account this month, you know, mm-hmm. my payment is due towards the end of the month, I'm barely going to have enough money to get me to the next paycheck. And that's the God's honest truth. And because it's just, you know, it goes back to the access to money, the cost of living, corporate profits going through the roof. Everything is going up, 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 except our paycheck. Well, if everything is going up and up and up and our paycheck is not going up, then, you know, common sense tells you that you're going to really have a deterioration of the quality of life that you have. You know, you're going to go into debt. Debt equals slavery. Debt equals submission to employment. And, you know, enough is enough. I say enough is enough. I'm already saddled with debt, you know, because, again, paychecks are not going up in America. And I say, you know, we rearrange our economy to where we force employers to give wage increases. We force American manufacturers to build products here in America as opposed to shipping them overseas. We force the corporate, you know, corporatocracy, the kingdom that is known as the corporation, to recognize unions. You force these corporations to actually pay taxes. You force Wall Street to actually pay a transaction tax. All these different things that must be done will balance out our society and make it, you know, more palatable, you know, for you and me.
Oh, absolutely, Bob. And like I said, I feel that it's only going to get worse before it gets better.
Yes, it is, because our horrible president, President Obama, again, conservative President Obama, you know, he's not changed the fundamentals of our economy. In fact, he's further that in the direction, in my opinion, of more corporate control. You know, look at his advisors, look at the people. Did you know that for the Department of Homeland Security, we didn't talk about this, but, you know, in New York, the stop and frisk program, which is racial profiling, was struck down by a federal judge last week. Okay, and the architect of that program, Ray Kelly, a man who agrees with racial profiling, he's actually being considered by the Obama administration to be the head of Homeland Security. So if we have the Obama administration, which is supposedly, you know, friendly towards minorities, although I don't think so at all, we have him wanting to appoint, you know, Ray Kelly to the Department of Homeland Security, a man who his legacy is built on stop and frisk, which says that for no reason police officers can stop a minority, stop a black person, stop a Hispanic person, and search them for a gun. And in New York, during the inception of this program, to get this, Justin, there's been over 600,000 stops, almost 700,000 stops under legalized discrimination known as stop and frisk, and only 600 guns have been taken off the streets. Well, you know, that is an infringement upon our civil rights, particularly among minorities. And the Obama administration is putting this guy up there to be the head of the Department of Homeland Security. What does that say about where we are as a society?
It says we're in a shithole, really, because I can honestly say the way this society is nowadays, Bob, I could see a big catastrophe happen, and then the rich people move underground.
Good. I think that would be good, because people are going to start to realize, just as they did after the Great Depression, that, you know, somebody's benefiting from our economy, and somebody has too much political power, and that power resides with the very wealthy. Remember, the wealthy have the ability to decrease your wage and decrease your standard of living. All right, we got 60 seconds here. Justin, give us your Facebook page and any other information you want people to know about.
Okay, Facebook and Twitter, at Justin Ray Harvey, and email is frankdukesfan@gmail.com.
My name is Bob Carson. You can friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. Follow me on twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And I want to encourage people to follow this show on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. We will be back at you probably next Tuesday. We're going to look to do the political show every Tuesday. Also want to remind you to go to the commonsprojectnetwork.com and support all the independent progressive media on that great website. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen,
Show some respect.
Show some out of respect. Thank you very much, Justin. I'll talk to you a little later on.
Thank you, Bob.